Welcome to Love and Life. Myself, Jonathan Sinclair, and Sia Sangweni Finn are standing in for Penny today, who is running a few errands and couldn't make her show today. But we have a fascinating topic today. And sorry, I'm just throwing my pen around the studio.
Oh, wow. You're just on the ball. I love it. It's a very hashtag unconventional replacement for Love and Life with Penny. But you know, I think it's still going to be an hour of insightful conversation. This is very, very close to where I was in like two seconds away, really. It's all about matrix stress, how we are as a society, how, you know, teenagers can actually handle and take this on and how they're actually dealing with it. So it's quite a little relevant topic, I have to say.
No, and some of the questions we will be answering with our guest, who we will introduce in just a moment. We're going to learn how to say no. How do you create balance in your life when you have a million things going on?
How so do like you, yoga? Downward facing dog, putting your palms up in the air and relaxing.
I don't think that is the kind of balance we are talking about. But we also know how to understand who you are, where your self-worth should come from, what is your self-worth, and all of these things. But our guest, and who we are so privileged to have you in studio, is Dr. Yasin Ali. Is that correct how we say it?
Yes, it is.
Oh, doctor, let me get your mic on. I'm so sorry. There you go, doctor. Welcome.
Am I on now?
You are on now. Yes, put you up there,
Dr. Ali. I just have to say, first and foremost, you're my new favorite person.
Okay,
because you are a psychologist, right?
Yes, I am.
You cannot prescribe medication.
No, that is the job of a clinical psychologist or a psychiatrist. So there are different categories.
Yeah.
Within which we function.
But you still, nonetheless, listen to our problems.
Absolutely, and all the time. That's what I do.
And I heard from a little selective little birdie that you even have the whole couch in your practice.
I do, the whole stereotypical
nice red leather couch. Oh, yeah,
room, of course.
You definitely now have a new client.
Yeah, we'll chat after the show.
Exactly. But just some background knowledge on you. How long have you actually been a psychologist?
Okay, so I've been in practice for the past 6 years as a registered counselor.
Got it.
You have different types of registration categories that we have in the field of psychology.
Yeah.
We have the registered counselor, you have counseling psychologists, educational psychologists, and psychiatrists, obviously.
Okay.
Okay. I have a PhD in psychology, just completed it this year.
So congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Wow. Officially a doctor, and I'm done with the study.
How many years of your life did that take out?
13 years.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's been a journey.
Yeah,
it has been a journey. Filled with lots of trauma, but well
plus
worth
12
it.
Years at school. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So you yourself need a psychologist to deal with this whole
we
process.
All do. We all do. Everyone needs someone that they can chat to.
Yeah. But what was it for you that made you want to enter this field?
Do you know, I think that South Africa is a place that's filled with so many needs and unfulfilled needs that people just we don't really have a need base that is being met. So, for example, there are lots of traumas, okay, lots of violence, lots of crime. And from a very young age, obviously, we're exposed to this. When you're in school, there's a lot of bullying. There's a lot of peer pressure. You have self-esteem issues. But not really. There's no one to actually listen to you.
Exactly.
No one gives you the time of day. Okay. In fact, you're just left on your own unless you come from a very privileged background or family where you can get access to these particular needs and services. So I'm always interested in community psychology, in community service. And I just found this passion somehow along the line. I slipped into it and boom, 13 years later, here I am.
What was your turning point where you said, this is what I'm going to commit my life to? What happened that you realized you can help people by just, I don't know, I suppose being there and being unbiased? Sometimes it's easy to find someone to listen to you, but perhaps they're not an unbiased source to give you advice.
Well, that's why we have friends.
Yeah.
You know, they tell us crap on time. They tell us where to get off. That's exactly what happens. And the role of a psychologist or a registered counselor is to obviously take your pain, take your experience and give it back to you in a manner that's more manageable.
Exactly.
And in South Africa at the moment, with all the trauma, all the violence, all the needs out there, there's a definite lacking of registered counselors. And at the South African College of Applied Psychology, where I am an educator, this is one of the needs that we're attempting to address.
Mm-hmm.
That's slightly scary, though, that there's a lack of psychologists. That kind of says we're a society with a whole lot of issues.
But a lot of issues.
Why do we have a lack? Is it because the studying process is too long? So perhaps lots of them start very few finish. How? What is the problem?
Well, that's one of the major reasons. When it comes to actually practicing as a psychologist, you need to have a master's degree as a bare minimum. And to get in for your master's degree, there's a very stringent selection process. Mm. So maybe 12 students per year get selected from a pool of about 140.
But so why is that when they know there's a shortage of psychologists, do they only take so many?
I think it also boils down to services that are available and the number of educators and lecturers and the capacity of universities, which is why there's been the introduction of the registered counselor category. Mm-hmm. So once you have your degree, you can complete an honors degree. And from that particular perspective, you can practice, register with counsel, and you can deal with all sorts of traumas within limited scope, of course.
Yeah.
And the South African College of Applied Psychology is one of the very few colleges or institutions in South Africa that are currently offering the BPsych qualification.
How is South Africa as a society, given, you know, we are this rainbow nation, yes, and we have a lot of different cultures and people, etc., etc., mm-hmm. but I still feel, I think taboo's not the right word, but there's still this almost stigma to certain things. And like going to psychology still might have the little, oh, you're crazy. It's not like, no, I just need someone to talk to, or I just need to vent.
Yeah, there is that perception that if you're going to see someone for, let's say, mental health reasons, that you are a weak person, a self-indulgent
person. Just even using that
person.
Term mental health is like, well, there goes.
My therapist said.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So how are we as a nation? Are we opening up to that? Is it something that's we're getting more comfortable with?
I think as South Africa westernizes as well, which is something that we are seeing, it's happening exponentially.
Yeah.
A lot of younger people coming into the scene and being exposed to social media because the world is just limitless at the moment. Everyone's kind of opening up to the idea of, hey, maybe I can go and speak to this guy, this Dr. Ali or the psychologist. Maybe it's not really a big deal. You know, and one of the things that we do teach our students at the college is, you know, in the same way that you go to a medical practitioner to get medication if you have a flu, if you have certain emotions that you're not coping with or certain experiences, you need someone that can just assist you in managing it.
But that would then be a long-term process, whereas if you were just going to the GP for your headache or your sore throat, it would be a once-off visit. This is an ongoing process, is it not?
It depends. So, for example, the role of the registered counselor is to address the trauma as it happens in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So as opposed to leaving you sitting with that pain for a few months, which can develop those symptoms into a more permanent disorder, we actually contain that pain. And we teach you the coping strategies around that. So it's about in the immediate aftermath of, say, for example, a hijacking. We deal with the fear, we deal with the pain, with that actual trauma. And we teach you the coping strategies that you require to just move on.
So the sooner a trauma is dealt with, the better.
Oh, yes. And there is that perception that, you know what, don't worry, just pray, you know, or have some sugar water or just get some rest, have a burger, go have some ice cream, and things will be okay. But you don't realize that in that process, you start developing very bad habits. You start smoking more.
Oh,
you start drinking
home.
A lot more.
This is hitting home.
So, yeah, it's very important for us to realize, and I want the listeners to just maybe internalize this one point, that going to see a psychologist or going to see a counselor does not make you crazy. It just makes you someone who is brave enough.
Exact opposite of that.
Absolutely, you know.
Yeah, you actually realize, hey, I do have a problem. I need some help. I can't cope on my own. So it's actually the total opposite of being crazy. Actually,
absolutely
admitting that. And
of course,
But just on a personal level, what sort of person do you have to be to go into psychology? Because it's one thing to deal with your own issues. Now you're saying full on 9 to 5 or even longer, you're going to sit down, you're going to listen to other people's issues. That's hectic.
It's quite a stressful position, but remember that part of your training teaches you how to cope with those emotions, with transference of feelings. So
You're using psychology terms now.
Oh, yeah. Am I starting
very
to
professional
scare you?
Transferring
well,
of feelings.
Well, basically, if I'm really down and I start speaking in that particular manner to you, you'll actually pick up on that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you watch a particular film, let's say Titanic, towards the end, by the time Jack is sinking down, you also cry.
You're gone. You're
exactly,
a mess.
Exactly, because you've picked up on those emotions.
Uh-huh.
So part of your training teaches you how to manage that and how you actually have to find coping strategies and your own resources to rely upon.
Oi. That's very, very freaky. Now you got me thinking a hectic amount now.
But doctor, let's just go back to what you are doing. You are placing special emphasis on matrix and the stress that they deal with, especially this time of year. What is going on with that? What is your objective in dealing with Matrix?
Okay, so what we've discussed at the South African College of Applied Psychology, together with other educators, is that the metric year for all of us, and you just mentioned that a few seconds ago,
yeah,
you were in Matrix. So you see, you understand just how intense that
was. Very, yeah.
Okay, and at that point, you just feel like, oh my God, my life is falling apart.
Yeah.
There's no one to support me. I just would rather count the birds outside than to study. Or I can't pass. I'm never going to make this.
Yeah.
What am I going to do with my life? So you're literally standing at the crossroads, not knowing where I'm headed. Or you have an idea that, yeah, I want to be this gynecologist. Or I want to be an accountant. But you don't understand the nitty-gritty of that.
Oh, it's just everything. It's this perception of what you want to do mixed then with a slap of reality what your circumstances are. And not only you're dealing with your own issues, it's pressure.
Absolutely.
Parents are on you. Mm-hmm. Your siblings are on you. Yeah. Literally, okay, let me be exact. Right. My parents were better like, listen, you got to ship up and shape up and you got to be ready. My siblings are on this term of, well, I got 5 A's, but try beating that.
Yeah.
You have your school who wants to remain and have this great image. You have your friends.
You want to get accepted to university.
Society as a whole. Mm. Oh, Lord, where's your red chair? I need to like slash down.
Like I said, we'll have a discussion after the session. But at the college, we had this discussion about what can we do just to take the information we have and share it with students in the country. And that is where this whole Matric campaign came about. It was just to provide some education around the benefits of just understanding yourself a little more deeply and stepping back from that pressure, because we all have a choice.
Looking at the bigger picture, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And where do I fit into this bigger picture? Mm.
The fascinating thing that I'd like to know is, have the Matrix in 2014, for example, carry more of this stress, this anxiety, these issues versus the Matrix of, for example, 2004?
Okay. Let's just do that comparison. From 2004 to 2014, that's a 10-year gap.
Yeah.
And in these 10 years, a lot has taken place. If we look at some of the major influences that adolescents have as their role models, we have Nicki Minaj. We've got these Justin Bieber's. We've got a lot going on.
We've got Twitter.
We've got Twitter. We've got Facebook. We've got social media. The world is available to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And with that availability comes this crisis of sorts. Because remember that as an adolescent, you are in that process developmentally, emotionally, mentally, physically, where you are establishing an identity for yourself. So this means that you will hang around with certain people. And if you get along with them well enough, then hey, you will adopt the way in which they speak and the things they do, the way they dress, which is why sometimes teenagers would love their body piercings and, you know, they make their hair all sorts of the rainbow, colors of the rainbow, etc. Because you're experimenting. You don't know who you are as yet. So it's a crisis of sorts, because not only are you faced with this identity of who am I in life, but now I've got to make a decision in terms of where do I want to be and how am I going to be defined? Am I going to be a doctor? Am I going to be a musician, a dancer?
Wow.
So it's a very tough period, you know, that these teenagers find themselves in.
So are you trying to help them get through the exam process per se, or are you trying to help them more with the aftermath of Matric?
Both.
Okay, so you're trying to help them get through now and make the right choices about later.
Absolutely, because remember, the decision of what happens later depends on how you perform right now in your matric exam. But your performance in the matric exam and your concentration also depends on where you see yourself going in the future.
Why are you doing
so
all of that?
So it's all linked.
It's all like a chain reaction.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And with that, like you said, it's pressure from your siblings, because I had 6 A's in matric and you will make sure you get those marks.
Yeah.
My parents expect certain things. Why are you not studying? You know, but I just want to be on Facebook for 5 minutes. And, you know, people don't tend to understand the pressures that comes with being an adolescent in 2014.
It's easy for parents to look back and realize how important an education is and to say your kids must study for a certain amount of hours a day. But they don't actually remember, I think, what it was like back then. Because now education might be so big to your parents, but to you it might not be such a big thing. And you haven't had that life experience to realize how important it is.
Absolutely. And that's another thing, because if we listen to a lot of the music, watch these films, some of the major influences, like I've mentioned, the messages that are portrayed in their particular themes or their existence doesn't really include education very strongly.
Oh, no.
You know what I mean?
Nobody's saying, hey, don't pop bottles, pop
exactly.
a textbook it's, open.
Absolutely. And with that comes this, well, I don't need to study. I'm going to be just like so-and-so superstar.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't realize that is their career. You know,
and
it actually was hard to get to that.
Those people do have degrees. Those people have educations. Mm-hmm. Just because they're a singer doesn't mean they haven't got something behind them.
For sure. And we know that, you know, with the current work situation, not just in South Africa, but across the world, that even with a qualification, it's so difficult to find employment. Mm. So imagine how difficult this is without a higher degree certificate.
Mm. I don't know if this is backtracking too much, but sure. I feel like the crux of all of this stems from who you are as a person.
Yes.
Now, from your professional, you know, wisdom, it's not even education, it's wisdom. It sounds more philosophical. Do you create the type of person who you are, or are you naturally that person and you just need life to hone it out?
Okay.
And what goes into creating who you are if you do create?
Sure. Yeah. So there is this debate in psychology that we constantly, you know, throw at our students, and it's about nature versus nurture.
Mm.
And
oh, is that like the thesis question?
Yeah, it's a okay, huge got thing. It, got it. It's the basis for our beginning. You know, when you get students into psychology, it's nature versus nurture. So nature meaning what I'm born with, my genetics, the size of my nose, things that I just cannot change. Some people are born with a natural tendency towards being aggressive or loud or outspoken. Others are just naturally quiet.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot that you can do to change that.
Okay? Where does that come? Does that come from genetics?
It is genetics. It is
so
genetics.
Your personality really can be affected by genetics.
In part, it can. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. But then there's also the nurture debate that I'm born into this environment and the manner in which my parents treat me and raise me and nurture me. Those are the factors that actually will bring out my actual, you know, the anger that's inside of me or what I'm born with, essentially. Yeah. So the two actually function together, and that's what we try to bring out. It's your personality depends on this. But you can shift certain pieces and other elements. You've got to learn how to control, manage, or work with.
Mm. You say you can shift certain pieces.
Yes.
But is there like a crux, the core of who you are? Is that like you're born with it, you can't?
Yeah.
For example, some people who have sociopathic tendencies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is that set in stone from birth?
I don't know if it's set in stone from birth. There are different theories. So some theories indicate you are born with this.
Okay.
And then you've got to learn how to treat it. Others are, no, it's the social environment, or it's based on certain traumas that you're exposed to. So it's very difficult to actually pinpoint it, you know, and come up with one particular answer.
Not to throw you in hot water, but what do you believe?
I believe in a combination of both. That we are born with certain traits, with certain genetic factors that place us in certain positions. But at the same time, it's our environments that can shift and shape that completely.
Yeah.
But now, Doctor, what would you say to a family? Let's say their one child is born and they're a quiet, reserved child. Second child comes along, he's off the wall, he's very extroverted.
He's out
but,
there.
But now they have the same genetics and they really haven't had much time in the environment to be. So they were born from the same parents, but
so clearly someone is adopted or someone is lying.
Oh, you just born that way.
Well,
this is the first thing I would say to parents is stop comparing. You know, no two fingers are the same, and your two kids can never be the same.
Mm-hmm.
There's intelligence that is expressed in different ways. And for example, my brother is really good with mathematics. I hate it. I am horrible with numbers.
Oh, yeah.
I'm horrible with numbers, right? But I'm really good at speaking to people and understanding the psychological processes. So intelligence is expressed in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And you just need to allow your child to find their own intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm writing that down. I'm going to tell my mama tonight.
In terms of these intelligences, there are several times. Like, you could be musically inclined.
Absolutely.
And like you say, you are, I don't know if the correct word would be verbally inclined.
It
or,
could be, or even just more socially inclined.
Yeah, socially inclined. And then, you, like you say, you get your brother who's into the mathematics. And
so
those
more
people,
analytical.
Yeah, those people might be good in medical fields or et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
But then what about people whose kids might, say, be a good drummer, but then they don't really want an education. Do you force your kid to get an education even though they want to pursue a career in drumming?
Okay, this is a conundrum that many parents have asked me when they bring their kids in for counseling, and you know, the son says, well, I'm really good at maths and their results in school are, you know, fantastic. They've got A's across the board. They speak really well. They can hold a conversation, but they indicate that I have no intention of going to WITS or, you know, for any educational institution at all.
Yeah.
And it's a big thing because we understand the value of an education. We do understand the value of an education, but and our parents do. But young people, like I said, based on many influences, don't see that.
They haven't had to fend for themselves.
Absolutely. And I've got the skill, so hey, I can play the drums. I don't really need to study for this. I don't need a piece of paper.
Mm.
Unfortunately, though, part of my role is to make them see the flip side.
Yeah.
That you can get a qualification in drumming or music.
Mm.
And that in itself will place you in a better position of being employed.
Than just having this random wish.
There we go.
Before we get right into the thick of the actual matric exams conversation.
Yes.
Do you think a student is really going through this alone? Or should it be a conversation between the teacher, the parents, the family members, the friends, the influences in the life? Or can someone just be like, you know, it's all about me, it's all about my life, and I can handle this?
Okay.
What do you advise as a psychologist?
So it is, you know, on one level, it is about you. It is about your own life. It is about where you see yourself going.
Okay.
But at the same time, we are not functioning in glass bottles. You know, we are social beings and we have to interact with others. We get ideas from other people. So when I was in school, I thought that I was going to be a pilot. I wanted to fly in the air. You know, that's what I wanted. But clearly, that didn't work out the way I wanted.
Yeah, I had many a change. Yeah.
and we've got these perceptions of what those careers will be or who we think we are. But unless we interact with other people, we won't really understand if that truly is who we are.
But also sometimes, like Sia was saying earlier, the reality of what you think you want to do and actually doing that thing. So, for instance, you might have wanted to be a pilot, but you don't realize that actually you're not actually going to be flying that plane. You're going to be pressing a few buttons and the plane flies itself.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to be a doctor just because you wear a coat.
And people when you're a doctor?
No, when you run to patients, your coat flaps in the air like a superhero.
Okay.
Then I realized you're actually running to see blood. And I was like, okay, maybe not.
You see, sometimes the reality of that career is not what you expect. But when we come back from the break, doctor, I want to chat to you about self-worth and how we base, for instance, what our jobs are, maybe our marks in matric on,
and how you even go about defining all of that and deciding for yourself.
And what is your self-worth and what it should be based on? We chat about that after the break.
When you try your best but you don't succeed, when you get what you want but not what you need, when you feel so tired but you can't sleep, stuck in reverse, and the tears come streaming down your face, when you lose something you can't replace, when you love someone but it goes to waste, could it be worse? Lights will guide you home and ignite your bones, and I will try.
Stream down your face.
What a song. It's Fix You by Coldplay. And listen, we're like 2 seconds away from being an absolute mess in studio, talking about something heavy. We have a psychologist, Dr. Yasin Ali, in here. He's telling it like it is. Basically, in the 3 minutes of the song, he told me that I'm a control freak and I need like a few sessions with him.
No, yes. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I know people who are often very picky about what they eat are very controlling. And you'll often find with anorexic people, the doctor will tell you.
No. Hold up.
No, I'm not saying Sia is anorexic, but people who are in very trying to control what they put into their body are generally control freaks. They like things in certain orders.
I don't appreciate that the doctor's nodding his head. So yeah. Listen, this is not a pick on Sia. It's actually
often the reason Sia doesn't eat throughout the entire day is not because he isn't hungry, okay, but it's because he will only eat very now. He's a vegetarian, but he won't eat vegetables. He won't eat he's the most pickiest vegetarian I've ever met. But
moving
anyway,
on,
that is besides
yes,
the point.
This is not Pick on Sia Hour. It's yes, a special edition of Love and Life. Penny is not in the building today,
yes,
so it's just Sia and Jonathan taking over your airways for the next few 20 odd minutes as we talk about stress, and particularly matric stress, with Dr. Yasin Ali. He's quite a qualified guy, tons of experience that I was already milking. So let's continue this discussion. Very, very fascinating.
Yeah.
So before the break, we said we were going to start hinting at the fact of self-worth.
Yeah.
And does that actually play a huge role in the likes of matric students as they head into exams?
Sure, not just matric students, but everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a self-worth, and the self-worth is the value that we place upon ourselves.
So that's what it's defined as.
It is. It's the value that we place upon ourselves. And, you know, as much as we do love who we are,
yeah,
remember that the manner in which we love our lives, it's in the social world. So with parents, with friends, with teachers, with people around us, and we are constantly fed with certain comments or criticisms or negative remarks. And what we tend to do is we rely a lot more on those negative points or comments that people give us, and we internalize it. So someone says, but what's wrong? Why do you have on that T-shirt? Or,
yeah,
you know, you shouldn't be wearing that.
Yeah.
And suddenly you think, but I like it, but okay, is something wrong with it? You know, do I not have style? Or what's wrong with me?
Huh. Whereas, are you saying we more likely to forget the good comments that get put to us? And I mean, I'm just thinking to myself, I can remember all of my colleagues in this office, I can remember the bad things they've said to me.
That's exactly
but I'm
it.
Trying to remember exactly the good things they've yeah said to me, and I know they have, I just can't remember them. Like,
for sure, because yeah, we are so attuned to actually you know, listening to things that are bad and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That the moment someone says something good, it's like, no, don't tell me that. What's wrong with me?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's almost as though it's
you get
defense.
Uncomfortable when people compliment you. I find that with myself. And you try almost change the subject or steer it in a different direction and say, just laugh it off. I don't think we know how to take compliments with... I don't think we want to be seen as vain or...
For sure.
Yeah.
You see, there's this fine line between, and I can use happiness as the perfect example. Some people, it's a fine line between knowing you should be happy and deserving, feeling like you deserve to be happy. Now, is that the likes of self-worth? Because, for example, you know, I could say that I'm an... people's person, sociable and you know, confident, but saying I have great self-worth, and is that also related with self-esteem? It's quite a tricky thing to decipher within yourself, even.
So yeah, self-esteem has actually become the it's almost the pop psychology term that a lot of people rely upon.
Okay.
Self-esteem is the feeling that we have about who we are, essentially, in a nutshell.
Okay.
But it's made up of so many different components, your self-worth, your self-efficacy, all these big terms and terminology. But essentially, it's about me, my feelings towards myself, the value I place on who I am, and taking all of that and then relating this to the world.
So how do you go about deciphering how you feel about yourself?
Okay, so it's an interesting point. How many times during the day do you actually look in the mirror and say, hey, sexy thing, I love you?
Oh.
I don't, yeah, I think for most, okay, I can't speak for Sia.
Right.
But for the rest of us, I don't think we ever do that, really.
Is it a comfortable process, just looking at yourself in the mirror and pointing out everything that's good about you? Or will you look at everything that's bad? Or negative, right? And I've got to link this up to another concept called the inner critic. I don't know if you've heard of this, but the inner critic is that voice that plays in your mind all the time. We all have it.
Yeah.
And it develops in relation to the comments we receive from other people.
Mm-hmm.
So the inner critic is actually there to protect us. Quite ironically, it's that voice that says, well, don't do this, or, you know, stay away from that person. But where does it come from? It comes from the experiences we've had with other individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So someone says to you, oh, you're such a stupid idiot, or you're so fat, or you're so ugly, or you will never account to anything in life. That voice takes it and stores it in your mind. Mm. And the next time you are faced with the same or similar situation, it actually prevents you from breaking that barrier. Because it says to you, no, I can't do this. Remember the last time what happened?
Exactly.
Remember how you were insulted?
Exactly.
Remember how you felt? So don't make the same mistake twice.
But could that voice, is that not some sort of motivation tool? So for instance, let's say someone did call you fat and maybe you have put on a few extra. Mm. And then that inner voice could drive you maybe to not eat so many chocolates,
etc. You see, I would say that that is a healthier perspective.
But at the end of the day,
some people can't do that.
At the end of the day, although you might be losing weight, it's coming from a negative point because someone called you fat.
Well, look, the inner critic essentially focuses on all the negative comments.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to hone in on anything positive to say, well, you are fat, going, stop this, stop eating.
Yeah.
It will actually make you feel a little more depressed because...
And want to eat more.
Exactly. Think about it. That thought's now in your mind and it's a negative thought.
Mm.
It's going to elicit a negative feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And the negative feeling will elicit certain behaviors.
Mm. Oh, yikes.
But if you have a positive thought, it elicits positive feelings. And those positive feelings elicit positive behavior.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there are ways in which we can actually, control this inner critic. We are not slaves to it. And
yeah.
many people don't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
They actually think that voice is a part of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually all those comments, whether it was your dad or your parents, your friends, bullies, whoever it was that gave you those comments, and you can externalize it.
Yeah.
So what I do with a lot of the teenagers that I work with, I inform them and I just say that give this inner critic a face. Just, and I'm asking you to do that for yourselves right
picture
now. How does your inner critic actually look? Is it a little goldfish? Is it a tree? Is it a human? How does it look like? What is this?
Yeah.
Make it real.
Mm-hmm.
Because the moment you make it real, it's no longer the inner critic. It's something tangible.
Mm-hmm.
I can see
that
I know what it looks
you.
Like. And it's not you.
Yeah.
And then you can actually start having conversations with it. So when you're having those negative thoughts, you can actually, start saying, well, shut up or keep quiet. And I don't want to listen to you any longer.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
And in so doing that, when you do this, you actually unmask the critic, you disarm it, and you start feeding it with more positive affirmations that you keep quiet, little, goldfish in my mind. I am the person in control here.
You see that in a nutshell, you're touching on and you're using the terms like conversations, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But this is all summed up by introspection.
Mm-hmm.
Or what might, distance a few people, meditation.
Yes.
Do you think that is pivotal and this is something we should be exercising in our modern day lives where we do take a few seconds and we actually, I once heard a definition of pain being pay attention inwards now.
Mm, nice.
And that is a powerful one. I even wrote that down. I was like, yes.
That is quite profound.
So whenever you feel something, you should actually pay attention inwards now.
And say, why am I feeling this?
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah. But we don't actually do that. I mean, I know sometimes I actually get so caught up doing life, just doing things.
Exactly.
That you stop,
this rat
not
race.
Even for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
To step back and breathe. Just take a deep breath in and feel on your body, where are you feeling tension or pain and where is this actually coming from?
Yeah.
And the benefits of just taking 5 minutes a day can change the manner in which you, or it can actually shift your motivation.
Yeah.
Because you're no longer doing things out there. You're just centering yourself back to who you are.
Doctor, what should we be basing our self-worth on? Clearly it's unhealthy to base it on your career and the way you look. What should it be based on?
So your self-worth is based on, and I've got to say, it's a combination of many factors.
Mm-hmm.
So your parents, the interaction you have with friends, schooling, your skill,
mm-hmm.
things that you like, things that you dislike. Okay, and you've got to almost conceptualize and create this
mm-hmm.
to work for you.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to make your life work for yourself
mm-hmm.
because the more you hold on to a certain celebrity says that I've got to have a certain look,
mm-hmm.
that's not who you are.
Nicki Minaj says I got to have an anaconda that don't.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And many young girls are actually doing exactly that.
I get it. I get
that
it.
They
no,
can do this.
Serious.
So it's not even, they don't understand exactly what that implies. But they're twerking and they're doing all sorts of strange contortions with their bodies.
Yeah.
They don't understand
they
exactly.
They don't understand the implication of that and
yeah.
the image that is then portrayed in the minds of other people.
Mm.
Okay, so now you're suddenly externalizing and making your worth based on what other people expect or what you think people want from you.
Mm-hmm.
But ask yourself that question, who am I? Just who am I? Take a piece of paper, a pen and a paper, and write this down, like, who am I? Dear Sia, dear Jonathan, my name is Jonathan, and dot, 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 dot. You'll be surprised how much of effort this actually takes.
Yeah, do you actually have to think all the things you are and
aren't? And to separate what other people actually think of you from what you think about yourself.
So it is not, I am a lawyer, I am the first team rugby captain, but it's, I am kind. I am nurturing. I am a listener. Is that how you start to build up who you
it
really
is,
are?
It is, but also we shouldn't forget those achievements that we have accomplished. So
okay.
I am a lawyer, and I'm so proud of that.
Yeah. Okay.
I am a lawyer, and I got to this point because I studied really hard.
Yeah.
I am a lawyer because blah, blah, blah. It's you've got to incorporate that as well. You can't externalize it.
Yeah.
Because then you're not giving enough attention to your career, and we know that career becomes almost or more than 75% of your life.
Mm. Yeah, I know that it's something like, I don't know what the exact amount is, but such a high percentage of your adult waking life will be spent at your job. Now, you may spend more time at home, but how many of those hours are you asleep?
Of course.
So the majority of your conscious adult life is going to be at work, so you may as well do something that fulfills you and that you love, you know?
And then bringing this back to the matric students, this is such a difficult phase. Again, it's a crisis.
Oh, yeah.
Because how do you define where I want to be in 10 or 15 years' time?
Mm.
It's so difficult. Do we know where we want to be in 15 years' time?
We don't.
Oh. Oh, yes.
Okay, Sia has a lifelong plan. I know that. And I've heard it several times.
I even have age role models.
Yeah. He also has
like people I need to look like in
age,
my
age deadlines.
You're not externalizing this again, like what many teenagers do, where I want to be George Clooney or I want to
no,
be
not even
else.
That. I just want to have a wrinkle here, crow's feet there, nothing there. Yeah, I've thought about this, Doc. I think I'm sane in this department.
I think we need to have a chat after this. This radio discussion.
Yeah. But this is what I'm genuinely thinking about. Some people, you know, in their mid-20s, 30s, are still struggling with these issues. Mm. Now multiply that for some 17, 18-year-old.
Yeah.
How do you actually cope? Mm.
You know, it's a very difficult one. And this is why this campaign came about, is we want to foster an awareness, a consciousness of sorts that, you know, as a matric student, hey, let me just step back and ask myself, who am I?
Yeah.
Because even if I engage with that concept for 5 minutes, it may shift the manner in which I make certain decisions, or it may change my study pattern, or even just my attitude towards my future.
Yeah.
So who am I, and where do I see myself in 5 years' time? What type of person would I like to be? And what is it going to take for me to get to that point?
You see, that's a profound word in its own, consciousness.
Yes.
Just
yes.
to be aware, just to have some sort of introspection.
And let's face it, most people are just literally running this rat race.
Oh, yeah.
They wake up in the morning, I'm still asleep in the cars on the highway, get to work, have coffee, do what they need to do, get back home, have supper, get into bed, and the day starts all over again.
It's something that gets thrown around a lot, this introspection, consciousness, living in the moment, and it is so much easier said than done.
But you see
it. Takes a lot of work.
There are prime examples of, and I'm sure any and everyone can relate to this, you all have that one person, or many more if you're unlucky, in your life who actually molds and changes according to who they're around.
Mm.
And that's a prime example of someone who doesn't know who they are or isn't comfortable or sure of who they are.
Absolutely. And I mean, just think about how much of effort that takes and a lot of stress
comes
with it. Because trends change, people change. So that means I've got to evolve myself almost every week from who I was last week.
But once again, at school, you know, and I can really relate to this, school is so clicky.
Mm.
You know, if you don't play sport, then you can't sit with us. If you don't get A's, you can't sit with us. If you don't speak Vinak, sorry, you can't hang with us. It's so clicky. And how do you even shift and mold or know who you are while you're trying to fit in? And
it gets very complicated. But
exactly.
I will say this about being in school and faced with a lot of peer pressure, if we can call it that. Because peer pressure is not just about someone handing you a cigarette or telling you to have a drink.
It's more than
that. It's a lot deeper than that. And like you said, Sia, it's about fitting in.
Mm.
And we all have this need to belong. And given the fact that as teenagers, we're faced with this identity crisis of sorts, it's about which clique do I actually belong with?
Yeah.
And I don't want to be with the nerds, let's face it.
Yeah.
Even though in recent years, the nerds have become quite catchy. It's like hashtag nerds.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
you're
the
being
big
hipster.
I think Sheldon had a lot to do with
Sheldon
that.
Sheldon had a lot to do with this.
I know.
You've got to thank him for this.
Of course, you had to make a Big Bang Theory.
No, I mean, they make nerds look awesome. And,
absolutely.
And you realize that they aren't just people sitting at home looking into textbooks.
They've actually become sexy.
But they also, they have games they play and they're,
they
got
have
their
a
own
life.
Things.
They've got lives
exactly.
that they lead.
Oh, Jonathan is such an advocate for Big Bang Theory. It's scary. Yeah.
Yeah. Bazinga. That's all I want to say.
Moving on. I definitely see it so obvious, though. But let's just talk about the whole campaign, Matric and Beyond. It's also hashtag Matric AND Beyond.
Yes.
How did that come about and what is it all about?
So the Matric campaign, which was initiated by the South African College of Applied Psychology, in conversation with many educators at the college, we've realized that not just Matric students, but our higher education students themselves are faced with this, you know, both pressure to perform. It's about establishing clear rules of structure. How do I study? When do I do this? Mm-hmm. And if higher education students are faced with this, imagine what is going on in the minds of a matric student. Exactly. So that is where the rooting of this campaign stemmed from. And what we are doing is we are not just keeping it within the field of psychology, but we are diversifying and bringing on other members. Like with the Twitter campaign that we've got, or the Twitter chat, we will be... we've got many individuals. So we've got SADC, we've got the school networks of South Africa, we've got registered dietitians.
So this chat is taking place later today,
it's
the way
taking
I
place, yeah.
Okay,
from,
at what
from
time?
3 to 4.
So how do people become a part of that? They obviously follow you on Twitter, or how does it
they
work?
They can follow the SACAP Twitter handle, that is the South African College of Applied Psychology, or okay. The acronym is SACAP.
SACAP,
yeah. So if you search for SACAP, that's SACAP,
okay.
You will be able to follow the chat and follow all the professionals that are on there as well.
So you will be on there, and you say the South African Depression and Anxiety Group.
Yes,
okay.
We are going to have the Schools Network of South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
They are registered dietitians, and also, quite interestingly, Team Adventure Bootcamp.
Oh, how does that fit into the swing of things?
Well, remember that when we talk about balance and bringing balance into your matric study life, it's not just about I've got to study, eat, and sleep.
So.
It's I've got to study, I've got to spend 5 minutes on Facebook, I've got to listen to music, I've got to run outside, I've got to look in the
mirror. I've got to just sit and vegetate and do nothing.
Absolutely,
yes.
You have to, you know, stare at the pigeons outside, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
It's about bringing all these components together.
Mm.
So the more professionals you have, the more diverse the understanding is, and the deeper knowledge will be created in terms of...
And I suppose from the boot camp, they could get motivation.
Of course.
And also some, you know, exercise is also such an important part
absolutely,
of it, you know?
Absolutely. Exercise assists in boosting self-esteem.
Mm.
Really?
Yes, yes. I run a particular program with kickboxing and self-esteem. So it's counseling and self-esteem, you know, for teenagers who are faced with various issues. And I found over the years that, you know, many of these adolescents start their journey with me with a very low sense of self.
Yeah.
And with the counseling and with the kickboxing, over a few weeks, we can actually measure differences.
But now, is that because they start looking better because they're exercising, or is it because they start feeling better? Or is it, I suppose, a combination
of both?
Well,
think about it. If you change the mind, the body will follow. If you change the body, the mind will follow.
It's not just a cliche.
It's not a cliche. It actually happens. So if you actually look in the mirror and you see a little bump, you know, on your bicep, you're like, "Whoa, I'm
like, look at that."
All right, exactly. And it just makes you feel a lot better, and it motivates you to behave in a certain manner.
You know, the reason why I'm genuinely surprised of, oh, exercise is actually important, or eating right is actually important, because I resonate with when you know when you have your exam timetable and you're trying to cram, it's like I literally just have to study, screw eating. You know, some people go just on coffee, no time for exercising. How pivotal is it to really have this appropriate balance?
Beyond description. Because your brain cannot actually function after a certain point. I mean, you may be taking all this information in, or believing you're taking it in, but it's going in and going out. So you need to give your brain a little rest.
Yeah.
You know, in between your studying, you need to feed your brain. You need to feed your body. And not just with junk food.
Yeah.
Because that makes you lazy. It gives you that slump. You don't know exactly what's in there. We don't know, in terms of nutrition, what is in there. So it's very important to actually feed yourself with the right nutrients and to get the proper supplements. To get outside and just, you know, some fresh air and take a deep breath in and then get back to the books. And very importantly, not to use, I need balance and I need to go outside and exercise as an excuse to sit behind
study.
The Xbox. I mean, really, you know, the most important component for matrix should be their study timetable.
Mm-hmm.
And to that, they should start adding those components of, I need a 10-minute break, or, you know, a 15-minute run in the park, or chatting to my friends, or, you know, just sitting and mindlessly staring into anything.
Yeah.
I find sometimes people, I know myself, once you create a timetable and you don't stick to it, you give up on the whole timetable.
Sure.
Like, so allow yourself time within that timetable to vary and to maybe this can be moved around. Don't think that just because, same like when you're on a diet and you cheat, then there goes your whole diet out the window.
But
as opposed
some people
to,
still, even in this context, live with that golden rule of cramming and I'll be done.
Yeah, and it doesn't really work. For some people, it may work. Mm. I mean, it's just some people have that natural gift to absorb information. But for the masses of people out there, like myself, I need to plan my studies. I need to plan my work routine so that I get information done. I can absorb things and we can actually produce the results that we are looking for.
And as much as it may work for you or may not work for you, for ultimate balance and for that ultimate productivity, you would definitely endorse, you know, planning and
absolutely
thinking effectively.
Absolutely.
And yeah,
and not
planning
just a
ahead
day before you start studying.
Oh yeah.
You know, you need to plan in advance so that by the time your examination period is upon you, like it is right now, mm-hmm, you are already into that routine. It's become a habit for you. Mm. It's not something
so much
new and
easier
strange
that way.
Exactly.
So, you know, in wrapping up, I can't believe the hour's almost over and we have such a discussion. I think I'll give a little shout out to my former principal, and I know he'll be so proud of this.
What is his name?
Mr. Hall, Mr. Trevor Hall, wherever you are. He always told us this, and I was like, yeah, whatever, shut up, while I was still in school. But now I absolutely understand what he says. He always used to say, it's better to keep up than catch up. Mm. So to everyone riding out there, and from Mr. Hall's words himself, best of luck. And thank you so much, Dr. Ali, for coming in. And
thank you for having me in the studio.
Your pearls of wisdom, Nochal.
Yes, no, you've really taught us a lot. Just in reminding us, what time is this Twitter chat starting today?
Well, it will start at, what is the time now?
Yeah, it's 3 o'clock. I've already hashtagged Matric and beyond.
From 3 till 4, and I'm sure you can post your pics or your questions to us as well. And as a team, we will be more than willing to assist you and provide you with the answers.
And Dr. Ali, personally, where can people keep up with you? Do you have your own Twitter handle? What is that?
I do have my own Twitter handle. It's Dr. Yasin Ali, obviously.
Yasin, so it's
Yasin Ali.
Perfect. Yes. Doctor, thank you so much for coming in on Love and Life today. It's been a fascinating conversation. I think myself and Sia have learned so much.
Why didn't I get you when I was in matric?
Yeah.
I was watching reruns of Keeping Up with the Kardashians, and I had my whole
thing. Still watching them?
Yeah, we don't talk about
that. I think Sia must book a time to come and sit on your couch. I think there's some issues we need to deal with there.
Several. Yeah.
But Penny will be back next week on Love and Life. This has been Sia and Jono standing in for her. And yeah, we'll see you next week.
See ya.